All right, let's give it up for Jake and Kaylee. And let's give it up for Jake's incredible mustache. Oh yeah, for sure. Hey, I'm Brad. I'm one of the pastors here. I'm glad to welcome you today. I'm glad to welcome you online as well. If you're watching it live this morning or through the week, glad that you're joining us here. Do you like my shirt? So Jake's mustache got more than my shirt does. That's not good. You can get one of these shirts, and you might be asking right now, will I look better in it than you do? Yes, for sure. Absolutely. We're going to have these available at the end of next service, or at the end of next week, rather. They're just here, really, to draw attention to something that we as a church family have been thinking through this entire year. And it's around this idea of take notice and take interest. And what I'd like to do for the next couple of weeks is just think through together, what does the Bible teach us in terms of our influence in this world? And why does that matter? Why would that be a big deal? Well, let me take you back a couple of weeks. We just finished a series a few weeks ago called Strange New World. And if you didn't join us for it, you can go to our YouTube channel and catch up if you so want. But the whole gist of it was to think together in this really strange world that we face today that's so different for so many of us, never mind 20 years ago, just even so different post-COVID, all of the stuff that's coming our way and the changes within the kind of the moral structure of our world, if you will, and the fractured political scene that we're in and the geopolitical tension that's there and the economic questions and all of that. And we talked together about how it's possible with Jesus to live as people who believe they live in the safest possible place right now, in the middle of all of that. It's possible. And how we can have challenging conversations with people who might disagree with us or we would disagree with them. And Jesus taught us how to do those conversations full of grace, at the same time full of truth. Not trying to balance those, but full of both. And how he graciously has given us the eyewitness accounts of the first century and his death and his resurrection, people who were actually there and saw it and told us what Jesus taught, and their firsthand accounts really early on from when it actually happened. And eventually they were bound into a book called the Bible, and we have that. And it's just rich with direction and guidance and hope for us. And then if that wasn't enough, God in his wonder chose to, if for those that would want to, have his spirit live inside of us, who is a guide in this strange new world. So all of that together started to make me think about something. And it's along these lines. In the first century, something phenomenal happened. It's really odd. And it's this, that a small minority of people, about 100 or so people, would in the following years after they began to gather, so profoundly shaped their culture and their civilization that in the course of 300 years, they would renew and reshape and actually create a whole new culture out of the culture that began. Like, hold on just a second. 100 people. How does that happen? Especially because the world they were in was so strange to them. It was so different for them. They had a leader who had come along and had taught them a new way to live and had modeled a new way to live for them and said, I'm empowering you to live like this. And it doesn't look like your culture, but go for it. Like, live this way. And they did. And they reshaped it. Now, why does that matter? Because, well, I would say this. If you look at our current culture, the community of Jesus followers, those that call themselves Christians, are losing their influence. We're losing our influence in this world in so many ways. If you look at church attendance trends, they're like down to the left. Like they're not promising. We have a whole generation of young people who are just checking out completely. Some people have discovered that through COVID that they just have other things they would rather do than be part of a community of faith. And the statistics are actually shocking in some ways. And so here's the question. Is it possible that we've become the minority? Now, I'm not just talking people who call themselves Christians. I'm talking about people who have come to the end of their own self-saving devices and hopes and have surrendered to what Jesus Christ has done on a cross, which was to pay the penalty of our independence from him. And these are people who have said, I can't save myself. I'm going to trust in what Jesus did on a cross for me, that he came back to life to prove that there was real, legit veracity to what he did. And now, this is it. I surrender my will and my want and my life to him, and I let him guide me. That's what a Christian is. That's how the Bible teaches us. That's what Jesus taught. But could it be that that kind of follower of Jesus is actually strongly a minority in our world? And if that's the case, is there any hope for any kind of renewal with the influence of the church dropping and Christianity's influence? Is there hope? Can it be renewed? Are we like in some way like that small minority in the first century that caught on to something and they so were impacted by what happened to them that they actually changed the trajectory of their culture? Who they were and what Jesus did in them actually brought renewal to their culture. You see, they broke the mold for their generation. They had all kinds of models that were other than how they chose to do it that were right front and center and living out in front of them. And they could see them every day as one option of dealing with being a minority in a culture that worked against them. Well, one of the options that they saw in their midst was this. They saw that they could potentially just assimilate into it. They had a group of leaders in their culture. Remember, this is an era where Rome is subjugating them. The Jewish people are under the control of Rome. They're overtaxed. They're overburdened. They're clearly not on the in with the powers of the day. And so some of them, a group of them, called them Sadducees. These were the elite, the rich folks in their community, decided, hey, you know what's best for us is to sort of not lose our faith, but let's tag politics to our faith and let's mix those up so that we can be seen as cooperating with Rome. So they're taking a little easy on us. And yet we're still also God followers. And they try to find that blend and just kind of assimilate into the culture. We can see that in our world today too, right? Another model that Jesus' followers saw was this. They could isolate. One of the groups that isolated was the Pharisees, but they did it this way. They became kind of the moral police of their day. They could find someone crushing grain on a Sabbath and go, aha, gotcha. That, you can't do that. You can't, like that. You can't do that. And they would find these other ways and they would, in a sense, move themselves out of the mainstream, but you know, throw darts at the culture and tell them how wrong they were. That's a model they could have taken. Another group that kind of isolated was a group of Essenes. Now, this was a group of people that said, hey, tell you what, we cannot get along with that Roman culture. We're going to isolate. We're going to form our own communities. We're going to train and teach our children our own things. We're going to do commerce with our own people. We're going to be communities away from because we don't want to be contaminated by that culture. And so they isolated. You can see that in our world, our response to the strange new world we live in. Here's another way that they had seen it modeled. You could combat the culture of the day. This was a group of people called Zealots, and they were the original God terrorists, if you will. They kind of responded in the kind of violence that Rome did. They responded likewise. They were the people that would subvert the government, and they would do what they could to take the government out. Well, that's a reality in our culture as well. Now, all of those models were present and real for this group of 100 or so Jesus followers, and yet they chose none of them. They chose something radically different, something that they hadn't seen before except in one person, in the leader of their group. His name was Jesus Christ. He had come into this world and he had started to teach a different way to engage culture. He had talked to them about influencing culture to, in a way, keep a distance in one sense, but at the same time live in the culture. Remember this? Remember the Thursday night before Jesus dies? He's got all his guys together in a VRBO in downtown Jerusalem in this kind of room, right? And he's talking to them. And he goes, guys, I'm going away. And you can't come where I'm going, but I want you to know I am so glad that God didn't ask me to take you out of this world. Instead, I'm here to tell you you're in the world, but you're not actually of the world. You function a little differently here. You're gonna do things differently, but I am gonna be with you as you do that. So you don't have to combat with your culture. You don't have to isolate from it. You don't have to assimilate to it. You can influence it. You can shift the culture of the day. I'll bet none of them would have believed this. Guys, do you know in 300 years, that cross that I'm about to die on in the next 24 hours is going to be on top of every single Roman building of significance as a symbol of victory. You go, no, come on. And I'm going to do it through you, little minority. Through you. This is how I'm going to do it. Through you. I bet they all would have said, you're going to be like the king leading the charge, and you're going to bring us to victory, and yet you said you're just going away. You really mean it? Jesus, you're just trying to pump us up, aren't you? You're just like trying to encourage us and inspire us, and you don't really mean that, do you? To which he would have said, I actually mean it. I think you, 12 and then 100, are going to be the minority that reshape the world. And today that's us. Really? Yeah. Here's the model that they followed, and it's still a model for us. This is from Matthew 5. This is Jesus' words. He says, and then they had never heard this before. This was new to them. Nobody had ever told this ragtag group of ordinary citizens that were really on the margins of acceptability, that they would be the salt of the earth. Salt was a flavor enhancer, and it was a preservative. And Jesus says, that's who you're going to be. But look, I got to tell you honestly, if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It can't, actually. It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. But that's not what you're going to do. You're going to be salty salt. That's what you're going to be. And then he tells them this. Again, they had never heard this before. You are the light of the world. You're going to be a direction finder, a way maker for the culture. That's what you're going to do. Like, this is how we do it in our day. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. That marked where someone was headed if the town was lit up on a hill. Neither do people light a lamp. Of course they don't, and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the houses. And you are going to become that in the world. And you are going to shift the culture of the Roman Empire. Yes, you. He finishes this. He says, in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and give you credit. Nope. And they're going to glorify your Father in heaven. They're going to say, is the God of heaven like you? Yeah, a little bit. Who makes you who you are? He does. Because you're an agent of hope in this world. You bring light and you bring flavor, and you seem to be preserving the good. And like, that's God in me. Now, honestly, if you have never, ever come to the end of your own try hard and your own, like, I'm going to somehow save myself and I'm going to do it, this doesn't really make sense. How does that work? Well, this is what Jesus taught, that he would come and live inside the human life if they asked and wanted and to say yes to his invitation. And then he would turn them into agents that would change their communities and their families and their places of work. Now, I know that sounds like high thinking, and it sounds like naive, and it might sound, wow, that's just inspiration. No, it's actually what Jesus did and invites us to be part of. It's so interesting to me. I was exposed to the writings of a guy by the name of Arnold Toynbee. Do you know who Arnold Toynbee is? You ever heard of him before? He was a well-known writer in the middle last century, 30s, 40s, 50s of the last century. In fact, he was pretty prolific. He wrote a series of 10 volumes, if you can imagine that, over the course of some 20 or so years. And he called it The Story of History. And in it, he surveyed 26 different civilizations in human history to kind of dissect who they were about. And he discovered that there was a bit of a cycle to them as a nation. They would grow, be influential, and then their influence would wane. And in some cases, it would give birth to a new civilization, or in some rare cases, that civilization on a decline would actually be renewed and have a new season of influence in the world. Now, he's not a man of faith, to my knowledge. He might very well be, because he would say, what I've discovered is all nations have a spiritual life to them, and that's critical in the renewal or the creation of new civilizations. What I found so fascinating about his writings, reviewing these 26 civilizations, was this. There's a consistent pattern that he picked up as to how civilizations get renewed and how new civilizations are born. I'm going to give you this list, whether you want it or not. So buckle up. Here we go. First thing that he noticed was this. The renewal or birthing was started by a small minority of people. A small group of people. Secondly, this small minority was fiercely loyal to each other. Third characteristic, they all influenced those in their immediate circle of relationships. In other words, they didn't have a grand plan of changing culture and society. They were so impacted by something, they couldn't be quiet. They told their family members, because that's who we tell. They told their colleagues at work. They told their neighbors. They told the people that they hung out with. You'll never guess. They weren't trying to start a movement. It's just so moved them that they talked to their immediate circle of relationships. Fourthly, they had an unflinching commitment to this new way. It dominated their world. Fifthly, this is the beautiful part. They were seen by those observing them as being redemptive and bearers of reliable hope. So they had a positive, hope-bringing influence in their world. I don't know about you, but that sounds like those 100 people that were in that VRBO in downtown Jerusalem. Because of the influence and impact, just a small group, fiercely loyal to each other, so impacted by what Jesus had done for them. Who did they tell? They went out in the streets and they told their neighbors and their family members and the people that they worked with, people that they hung out with, you'll never guess who I met and what he's done for me. And then what he had done for them made them redemptive in their culture. They didn't throw stones. They didn't complain. They didn't picket about Rome. They didn't undermine Roman authorities. They followed the model of Jesus and made a redemptive impact in their culture, and their culture started to see them as, you have a reliable hope for me. It's amazing, isn't it? He called this idea that he came across, these kind of characteristics of these small groups, he called them the creative minority. They were the minority, but so moved by what they experienced, they just got all kinds of creative in terms of how to live that out in their world. Does that sound like us? It should. Because we are the minority, but our lives have been changed by something, by someone. And we are the agents of hope in this wonderful world that God's given us. It's a strange new world. So much we don't understand. So much we don't like. So much that might have the potential to frighten us. And we don't see our way through. And tough conversations that seem to blow up in our face. And Jesus showed us a model through himself and this small minority of people how to be hope bringers in our world. And the thing is, the wonderful thing, it's so easy. No, it's not. There's a high cost to it. Have you discovered? Do you know there's not much cost in the immediate to assimilate in a culture? It actually can, in some ways, do you well. To isolate, you can just remove yourself from the problem. And you certainly can throw stones and you can feel good about yourself that you're maybe not violently, but you're aggressively pushing back on things. But to influence as an agent of hope is dangerous. It's dangerous. How would you like this? Your group of, 12 or so new friends, and Jesus says, hey, I'm going to give you an experience traveling out into the culture to live for me and what that looks like. And, you're going to go out and you're going to be hope bringers to the world. And, hey, by the way, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. Go for it. You know, in our culture, that is similar to what I experienced in the middle of the night this last night. A little bunny and a coyote having a tussle. Do you know who won? You can actually respond. You know who won? The coyote won. Do you know the bunny wanted to live? Screaming and screeching, it suddenly stopped. Go ahead, guys. Bunnies to coyotes. Go for it. It's high risk because you'll be misunderstood. There will be pushback. Your values will not easily blend. But you're going to be difference makers. You're going to be difference makers. You are going to change the culture. You're going to renew it. You're going to start something that has got a potency and a power. The influence that I want to have through you is profound. You can actually change neighborhoods. Right? Yes, we can. We're called to this. We're invited to it. We're the hope of the world because Jesus is in us. We can shift our schools. We can shift our places of work. We can shift how our team functions. We can shift our neighborhoods. It might not happen all at once, but we cannot lose hope in that. We cannot lose that. We must be difference makers to renew our culture. We must show up for our culture. We're agents of hope. Where else is it coming from? No place. It's us. And we have this unbelievable privilege of doing this in our world. But it's dangerous. One of the guys that hung out with Jesus, Peter, struggled with this. He didn't easily love people, let's say. He was part of that group of people when Jesus and the gang went to kind of what would be thought of as enemy territory, and they don't get well received. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and he's with the group that says, God, burn them up. Like, bring fire and gone. That's what I would like to have happen to them. Jesus hangs out with some little children at some point who were marginalized in the culture, and Peter was in that group that said, they're just kids. Like, forget it, they're just kids. Peter struggled with this. But eventually he got it. And then he goes out into the streets of Jerusalem, and apparently he goes to Turkey and Albania and Macedonia and ultimately Italy, Greece. And there he ends up in the city of Rome in prison because this is dangerous, right? But he takes some time, some 30 years after Jesus' death and resurrection, and he's seen it all for himself, to write a letter to some friends who are experiencing the danger of being hope agents in their culture. And this is what he writes to them. He says, finally, all of you, be like-minded. Be like, think like Jesus. Be sympathetic. Love one another. Be compassionate and humble. I know it's a tough culture. I know their morals don't line up. I know that they are not compassionate. I know they're making it difficult. I know you lost your house. I know you lost your job. I know you're paying a price. How about showing compassion and humility? Say what? Yeah, you don't get this stuff anywhere else, right? Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult, because apparently they had received a little evil and a little insult. On the contrary, do this ridiculous thing. Repay evil with blessing, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. For whoever would love life and see good days must keep their tongue from evil and their lips from deceitful speech. They must turn from evil and do good. They must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayer. They're praying to him, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. He's on their side. Who is going to harm you if you're eager to do good? Which the answer was everybody. Everybody. But even if you should suffer for what is right, it's a blessing. Because even in the suffering, you're an agent for hope. Like, who suffers with a sense of dignity and joy? You do. We do. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. And I love this verse. He says, but in your hearts, this is where it starts. Revere Christ as Lord. Settle that one. Settle that one. Always be prepared to give a theological answer why your neighbors are wrong, why their lifestyle doesn't work, why your colleague at work is messed up, and the guy on the soccer team you play with is just a jerk. Just be prepared to give a reason why you think that's the case. Nope. Give a reason, an answer to everyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have. We're a little hope deficient, right? But if we're following Jesus and he's real to us, there's hope in the disappointment and the diagnosis and death. Yesterday, I spent a little bit of time with a woman who's about 80 years old. Her family had invited me to come and be with her. She was near death. And I had the chance to hold her hand and to pray with her and to remind her, because she's lived a fearless life for Jesus, to remind her that the Lord is your shepherd. You have everything that you need right now. And even when you're walking in this moment through the valley of the shadow of death, you don't have to be afraid, because he's with you. At 8:30 last night, I got a text from her daughter saying she had just met Jesus face to face. That's hope. And we carry it in the name of Jesus in our world. We can change our world. We can change our families. We can change our communities. We can change our neighborhoods, places of work. Jesus' method was to take notice. To take notice and then take interest. Look for a need at work. Do this. I don't need to tell you. You are creative. You are the creative minority. You're creative. You know. You don't need instructions. These are just some ideas. Prime the pump, okay? Look for someone at work who's marginalized. Do this. Don't tell anyone. There are some people you don't like to work with. I know. Go to them and love them. Find out their story. Take them for coffee. Get interested in their lives. Find out how they got to be who they are. Find their story. You've got a neighbor that annoys you. Walk across the street and love them. Do a block party so that they don't just get like centered out. Invite people into your home. You know, that doesn't happen. We here in Arizona build 6-foot block walls around our property, and then we have a remote control that opens our garage door. We don't actually have to ever see our neighbors. Except we want to, because they matter. And we're agents of hope in our communities. You know, I hope this, wherever your home is, I hope you've got enough equity in it to retire on it. I hope it's a fantastic neighborhood and you love your neighbors and it's a great experience for you, not while you're there. I hope your job fits you exactly, that all the training you went through, all the experience, I hope you're getting rich off of the job that you do and you're passionate about it and it fits you perfectly, not what you're there for. I hope the classroom that you're in, the school you attend, is going to set you up for the job of a lifetime. That it's going to meet your needs and it fits your skill set that you have and your passions. I hope you graduate top of your class, not while you're there. I hope that that weightlifting class or that soccer team or hot yoga makes you fit and svelte and good looking and all of those other things. That's not why you're there. You are there because you may be the only agent of hope there. Live. Please live as a conduit of the hope of Jesus wherever you find yourself. Risky, yes, but if our culture is going to be renewed, if we're going to form this new wonderful kingdom of God that Jesus offers, he's going to do it through us. So let's do it. Let's take notice and let's take the risk of interest and see what Jesus does. Now, Jesus, if you would do that in us. Jesus, this is, well, maybe it's not overstating. Our families, our neighborhoods, our places of work, the place where we recreate, need you. They need you. They need hope in a dark world, in a confusing world, in a world that is coming at us almost too fast to take in, with changes we can't control, with elections we can't figure out and make the outcome what we want. In all of that, Jesus, we look to you for our hope. And then, Jesus, would you help us to have the courage to be agents of hope where we live, where we play, where we go to school, and where we play. For your sake and in your name, amen.